This is your Uncle Don, back with the 310th edition of my Porcupine Petting Zoo on CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. Next week at broadcast time, I'll be on my way to Portugal for a riverboat tour. I'll be missing three consecutive broadcasts before returning in May. Sorry about that, but I can use the rest. This week, I've resolved to give a break to one of UNBC's most notorious alumni. I cannot blame this person for all he says or does, for, as another once said so felicitously, he's only following orders. Enough. This brings to mind a disquieting moment I experienced at the UNBC bookstore. I noticed class rings displaying the legend, UNBC Alumni. I had to assume that these were intended to be sold to the minority of male graduates with multiple personality disorders. As you Latin students know, an alumnus is a male product of an educational institution. Alumni is its plural. This malapropism is kin to our use of the word them when referring to a person of unknown gender. Thus, we take the poor bugger or buggeress and multiply him or her. We can't just seem to refer to a human as it, although we have no trouble doing that to animals. English is a peculiar language, but simple Latin nouns should not be a mystery to persons, thems, who manufacture jewelry for students. While I'm carping about language, I'll take a shot at our CBC. In national news reports, cutback in evidence or in editing are apparent. More than once I've heard commentators refer to the Afghani people. This grates on the ear of anyone who knows that the citizens of that benighted land are Afghans, their monetary unit is the Afghani. It's amusing to hear one who is ignorant of this distinction refer to our intrusive war in defense of Afghanis. There may be more truth to that statement than the speaker realizes. I've watched a symptom of shrinking CBC services for some time now, and time is a part of it. Every morning we used to hear the following. The long dash following 10 seconds of silence is the National Research Council's official time signal indicating 10 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time. Somewhere along the line, the word official was dropped, leaving the National Research Council's time signal. But this wasn't the end. Soon, the National Research Council morphed into NRC. And recently, that 10 seconds of silence became 5 seconds. Now we have the long dash following 5 seconds of silence is the NRC time signal indicating exactly 10 o'clock. I watch this contraction avidly, awaiting the day when we hear, it's 10 a.m. That will be the day Harper's Conservatives aim for. The CBC will have been sold to join Petro-Canada as just another commercial enterprise. We have some good news on the economic front. It's overdue, eh? 5 American banks have repaid over $300 million of bailout money to the U.S. Treasury. Light at the end of the tunnel. But look at the figures. $350 million from $700 billion allocated to saving banks from their follies. That is one-half of one-tenth of 1% of the bailout money. Talk about grasping at straws for favorable news. Conventional accounting rules require financial institutions to assess assets at fair market value when reporting their quarterly status. They call this marking to market. When investments in dubious instruments like collateralized debt obligations tanked, they had to be marked down. The sound theory behind marking to market is the fact that an asset is worth only what you can sell it for. It works that way for individuals. Your house, your car, your furniture have only as much cash value as what you can get from them on the open market. But banks are not like real people. They protested the unfairness of counting current values of assets, which may be worth more later. They successfully lobbied the Financial Accounting Standards Board for a change in the American rules, allowing them leeway in evaluating assets on their books. Lo and behold, banks whose liabilities outweighed their assets were suddenly solvent. Now, similar accounting changes are being considered for Canada. This was akin to alchemy, converting lead into gold with a touch of a philosopher's stone. Now, American banks could count their worthless, toxic assets as cherished items of great value. This exercise of financial engineering is just a cheap trick postponing efforts to flush worthless debt out of the banking system. It gives them some breathing room but puts off the inevitable. Bad debt will, sooner or later, have to be removed. Paper rule changes and Tinkerbell wishing will not allow us to sidestep that reality. Every so often, a member of our government speaks the truth, requiring an application of discipline. This was the case when members of Parliament questioned a CSIS legal expert about the use of torture. He was asked whether information extracted through torture would ever be used by our intelligence agencies. His reply was, "We would only do so if lives were at stake." This echoed all the way up the ladder. The head of CSIS appeared before the House of Commons Public Safety Committee to ask the members to disregard the comment. Our Minister of Public Safety jumped into the fray to declare, "We do not condone the use of torture in intelligence gathering." Methinks they doth protest too much. That legal expert was prompted to clarify his original statement by saying, "It's the policy of CSIS to not knowingly rely on information that may have been obtained through torture." Knowingly? This sounds like a policy of don't ask, don't tell. As for the original exception of lives being at stake, this could be widely interpreted by an interrogator. Lives being at stake might bring to mind the ticking time bomb scenario, but it could be stretched to cover any lives, anywhere, at any time. It's unfortunate that our government, while pretending to be so humanitarian, actually gives a wink and a nod to sadists doing their dirty work. A barely noticed portion of the reactionary anti-female legislation passed by the Afghan parliament is the right granted a husband to have sexual intercourse with his wife every fourth night. This is a hidden incentive to men of wealth to procure no fewer than four wives. This gives them sanction to rape one night, wife every night, as long as he sticks to a strict schedule of rotation. But this legislation may be moot, as Afghan fanatics are busy killing any woman who dares to advocate rights for her gender. Acid in the face of schoolgirls or a bullet to a woman like Sitra Azkazi is enough to strike fear into the heart of any female hoping to be treated like an equal human being. This is what Canadian soldiers die for. The Alliance and progressive wings of the Conservative Party are bickering over the legacy of Brian Mulroney. All this while poor Brian was hospitalized in Florida with food poisoning. But don't cry for Brian. He has those thousands that Carl Hines gave him in large bills. Unlike most Americans, he can afford a Florida hospital. Brian's actions were defended by some MPs as he delivered two consecutive majority governments to the right-wing cause, and his minor crimes should be ignored. The Prime Minister's office issued a papal bull to members in an attempt to calm the divisions. The most remarkable talking point they advocated was this, quote, "These stories don't relate to anything that ordinary Canadians care about," close quote. No, we don't care that a former prime minister, recently out of office, accepted hundreds of thousands of dollars in envelopes delivered by a bagman for foreign corporations doing business with our government. We don't care that there's no evidence of Brian's having done anything legal to earn these thousands. There's no plausible reason for such payments to have been delivered in cash in anonymous hotel rooms here and in the States. There's no reasonable excuse for Brian's failure to report these funds in his income taxes until he was about to be discovered. On the face of this situation, there's strong evidence that a Prime Minister of Canada took bribes as rewards for favors offered while he was leading our country. But according to the office of our current Prime Minister, these stories don't relate to anything that ordinary Canadians care about. What is currently going on within our Conservative Party caucus that Stephen Harper might think ordinary Canadians don't care about? Ottawa's taken another step to save Chrysler and GM. Our government will guarantee the validity of new car warranties. They professed fear that potential buyers would avoid products of these companies if they had no faith in the worth of their warranties. This was a desperate act projected to save taxpayers $185 million on top of the millions or billions already showered on these entities deemed too big to fail. What has not been mentioned is the magnificent opportunities now open for scammers. With the government blank check, all manner of mechanics and quasi-mechanics can do work or pretend to do work on new cars, billing the taxpayer. Does your fan belt squeak? Better replace the engine. No problem, it's covered by your warranty. Although our open and accountable government will do its best to hide the costs of this initiative, I predict that it will far exceed the $185 million they projected. As long as our money is being thrown around, why not toss some at the television industry? CTV and Global are threatening to walk away from relatively small local stations that are not contributing to their bottom line. Using a perceived public need for local news, Harper's government is proposing to toss $150 million at these conglomerates in hopes of bribing them to keep such stations operating. Considering conservatives' record of loose control over monies dispensed to the auto industry, we have no guarantee that these millions would save the endangered stations. Funds could just disappear into the company maw for bonuses, dividends, or subsidies to other operations. Meanwhile, our CBC is suffering a shortfall of $170 million that Tories refuse to finance. We'll be losing 800 staff members and many local programs. These are not considered vital, while private television stations are. Might this allocation have something to do with the CBC's criticisms of conservatives' policies, while those of private stations tend to suck up to them? How cynical of me to even entertain such a thought. As to those stations which might be abandoned, why not tell the conglomerates that closing the station would mean sacrificing their licenses and equipment? Turn them over holus bolus to the CBC and give them the $150 million to operate in the public interest. Just a foolish suggestion of mine, as none of our major parties would ever consider doing such a thing, not if it offended corporate owners who are, in the final analysis, their biggest supporters. The Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police holds annual meetings. Fair enough, no big deal if they get together to swap war stories. However, these good folk don't pay their own expenses when attending these soirees. They're lavishly sponsored by such corporations as Taser International. Naturally, there's no intention on the part of this monopoly supplier of directed energy weapons to influence attending chiefs. The company was merely being public-spirited when it contributed $200,000 to the 2008 gathering. It wasn't enough to convince John Jones, an ethics advisor to the chiefs. He resigned his role. He made the startling suggestion that chiefs of police should finance their own meetings. How radical! I'm sure Mr. Jones will be replaced by someone of more flexible morals, perhaps a Tory flunky. I heartily agree with President Obama when he declares that the West is not at war with Islam. There's no particular reason why this religion should be singled out as an enemy of civilization as we conceive it. I don't advocate war with any religion. What I would support is a total lack of recognition of any superstition, whether it hides behind a crescent, cross sticks, a hexagram, or any other symbolism. Our political system should remain neutral and indifferent. And that indifference should mean no symbols in public places, no tax preferences for their properties, no privileged position for chaplains in the services, no swearing on religious books or any other recognitions. Religious beliefs, or lack thereof, should be strictly personal. Social relief should be secure, should be secular, and a complete rejection of what Bush initiated as faith-based initiatives, where public funds and obligations were handed over to religious organizations. We got the government out of the bedrooms of the nation. Now it's time to get the churches, synagogues, tabernacles, and mosques out of the government of the nations. Did you know that by convention, the Queen of Canada, as well as the next in line for the title King of Canada, can only visit here officially and by invitation? The woman whose portrait graces our coins can't set foot in the country unless she is the nominal head, except by grace of a minority government representing 40% of our voting electorate. Meanwhile, the disgraced accused war criminal, former President of the United States, can waltz in here any time that a batch of right-wingers want to hire him to give a speech of his signature nonsense. And when this dangerous clown comes, not only is he protected from a citizen arrest for his crimes, but he gets free police escorts. Something is amiss. According to The Guardian, you can now be an amateur American border guard without the inconvenience of having to endure heat, sand, and hostile Mexicans. The first 15 of 200 planned web cameras have been installed at strategic border points. They broadcast their pictures in real time on the internet so anyone with an internet connection can tune in and monitor their scope of vision. Some 100,000 web users have logged onto the program, spending time watching the most boring thing on a screen this side of the shopping channel. Anyone viewing suspicious activity is invited to alert officials via email. So far, agents have seized 900 kilograms of marijuana and intercepted many intruders based on tips from viewers from as far afield as Australia and Asia. Coming soon to a neighborhood. webcams spying on your activities to be monitored by snoops all over the world. George Orwell, are you there? This is CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George, British Columbia. But hey, webcams aren't necessary for spying. With the GhostNet virus circling the globe, remote nerds can turn on your computer, including your camera and microphone, should you have them. And they can use your own computer to bug you. Best not to have your rig in the bedroom, eh? Last week, my mailbox yielded a pamphlet entitled, Conservatives Help You Pay Less Tax. My member of parliament sent this work, at taxpayer expense, of course, advising me that his conservative government has helped me by cutting the GST, lowering my income tax, and targeting more goodies at students and seniors. Look at the 2% lowering of the goods and service tax begs the question of who laid that tax on us. It was Brian Mulroney who rammed the GST through parliament, burdening us with a 7% increase on almost everything we buy. Now conservatives pose as heroes for a small decrease in the burden, as they love to call taxes. Yes, they cut income taxes, most notably for corporations and upper brackets. These guys are the last of the advocates of Ronald Reagan's trickle-down economics. And they made up income tax shortfalls with the GST on all of us. Yes, they have made some tax exemptions for students and seniors. Looking at their record of breaks given to certain classes of taxpayers reveals a goal not of reductions where needed, but where they could cultivate certain groups. Very clever, but not good economics. Assuming that Harper's crew actually collects less in revenue than did the Liberals, look at the price. They continue to use the unemployment insurance program not as a vehicle for helping those cast off by the system, but as a cash cow to supplement overt taxes. The result is an increase in poverty as the newly jobless are dumped onto provincial welfare systems and thrown out of their homes. Canada, still one of the most wealthy of nations, hosts a plethora of tent cities for the homeless. Just more attractions for visitors to the Olympics, eh? Small breaks for students are more than offset by increases in tuition and fees as federal support for post-secondary education wanes. As for seniors, reductions of taxes are of little use to those drawing meager benefits from the Canada Pension Plan, often leaving them under minimum tax brackets. And we cannot expect increases in those CPP payments, since the fund launched into stocks and real estate instead of safe investments for our money have lost billions in the current meltdown. Federal responsibilities continue to be downloaded onto provinces, and provincial governments pass on the favor by dumping them on municipalities. Thus is the shortfall of revenues from oil and tar sands industries, subsidies to corporations, and low taxes on the wealthy passed down the line to the likes of Prince George. This leaves us scrambling to find money for social amenities and such frills as filling our community's gaping potholes. I have a message for Jay Hill, MP. If you and your minority band of renegades ever want my vote, you'll increase taxes, making them more progressive. You'll simplify income taxes, eliminating thousands of loopholes for specific batches of payers, and assure that the rich pay their share of government costs. You'll spend that money aiding the poor, rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, and providing a decent, affordable education to everyone who can benefit from one. Oh yes, one more thing. You'll get our soldiers the hell out of Afghanistan, where they're dying to support a bunch of reactionary gangsters. George Bush has returned to his blessed Texas in disgrace. There's no need to kiss his bottom anymore. It's comforting to know that everyone feels the pain as the world's economy tanks. For instance, think of those poor executives of financial companies who've lost their jobs, being cast onto the street with a few paltry millions in compensation. Think of poor Warren Buffett, reduced from the world's richest man to the second richest. He lost hundreds of millions in paper wealth in the last year. How can he sleep at night? Then there are the politicians. They know about the pain of their constituents. George Bush shed a tear for victims of Katrina as he made a flyby of New Orleans. Stephen Harper feels for those Canadians losing their jobs and homes yet not eligible for relief from unemployment insurance scheme into which they paid for years. Gordon Campbell shares the suffering of those who survive on a minimum wage he and his government refused to increase to keep up with inflation. And in recent news, we hear of the sympathy exhibited by Silvio Berlusconi, billionaire ruler of Italy. He certainly has his finger on the popular pulse as owner of half of Italy's television channels and overseers of the rest, which are publicly owned. He rushed to the scene of last week's earthquake, where he was heard to say that survivors lacked nothing. They have medicines, they have hot food, they have shelter for the night. Of course, their current accommodation is a bit temporary, but they should view it like a camping weekend. There's certainly no comparison between the aid given to Italian earthquake victims and the poor folk abandoned by Bush in New Orleans, but that quip about a camping weekend might not have resonated well among people mourning a couple of hundred friends, relatives, and neighbors, many still buried in the rubble. It'll be a long time before I can let George Wenker Bush rest in peace. With any luck, his regime will remain the gold standard for ignorant stupidity and superstitious abuse of power. Since his retreat to Texas, commentators have come out of the woodwork, exposing his misrule. I've no doubt that more misdeeds will come to light as investigators dig into documents and memoirs are written. What remains to be seen is whether citizens will learn from those 8 years of devastation built upon damage traceable back to Ronald Reagan. One good thing has resulted from that dark period. It makes Barack Obama look good, no matter what mistakes he might make. He's a world away from that despicable creep, George Bush the Lesser. When my wife and I take off to Portugal next week, we'll be leaving behind not just a beautiful spring, but an ugly election campaign. For 2.5 weeks, we'll be blissfully unaware of the lies, distortions, and plain old bullshit the rest of you will have to endure. The incumbent liberals will trumpet their grand accomplishments, but where's the opposition? Will the NDP remind voters of the selling of care homes and the abandonment of their employees? Will they promise to reverse the privatization of BC Hydro and not just suspend it? Will they emphasize the corruption involved in the sale of BC Rail? There are all manner of sins committed during Campbell's reign, but it looks like the NDP has abandoned its roots and returned to Me Too politics in an effort to woo the middle. Of all the damage caused by the Liberals, the item picked by Carol James for primary attack is the carbon tax. It's one of the few actions Campbell has taken that I agree with. We need this tax on fuels to be increased to discourage consumption and provide funds for renewable energy development. A slogan of axe the tax sounds cute, but it's dumb. But on election day, I'm sure I'll hold my nose and vote for the only alternative to the current destroyers in Victoria. Back when I was playing soldier, keeping a low profile and desk job, I might have been the only private in my company to subscribe to Time magazine. The Latin American edition was printed on onion skin paper, making it easy to pack in a hip pocket. I thought at one time that this magazine was the essence of truth, but events demonstrated otherwise. My first exposure to its slant was on Panamanian Independence Day 1959 in the Canal Zone. I had a temporary job guarding prisoners with a shotgun. On that morning, I was relieved of my weapon and issued a carbine, essentially a toy rifle. My shotgun was required by military police on the Canal Zone Panama City border, where riots were ensuing. I later read in Time that rioters were deterred from entering the Canal Zone and that all had been handled professionally and without violence. What was I to make of soldiers who had been there telling me that our men had fired live ammunition into the crowd and some people had been wounded or killed? Had Time lied? Last month, I was tempted to pick up another copy of Time, enticed by the headline, "The Bailout Bomb, YAIG equals WMD. Okay, I was taken in, as the story inside was innocuous, but I also learned from an article entitled Islam's Soft Revolution that Muslims are learning to reconcile Islam and modernity. Why, in Egypt, students are using text messaging to exchange Quranic verses. Muslim comic books in Kuwait portray the 99 attributes of God as action figures. Kids now answer their cell phones with a translation of "Peace be upon you" instead of "Hello." Sorry, but to me, the use of computers and other outward signs do not signal modernity, not when women are held as virtual chattel and the religion advocates murdering anyone straying from the faith. Time continues to be a vehicle for peddling advertising, fashion, and ideology du jour. Take its articles with a grain of salt. There once was a member of the UNBC body who went on to achieve success after graduation. No, he did not enter Parliament. In fact, this man became an organizer for the Communist Party of Canada in Toronto, which is neither here nor there. Johann was an active member of the Prince George gay community. Once he was called upon to give a speech in the park after a gay pride march. He was nonplussed as to what to tell the crowd, and he asked my sage advice. I told him to announce that 93% of the university community supported gay pride. Where did you get that figure, he asked. Same place politicians get most of theirs, I replied. He made his speech, citing that figure, and the crowd exploded with enthusiasm. But I'm not here to tell you that 93% of the university community listens to Uncle Don. Another esteemed Canadian, one Sidhu Day, now touring China as Canada's trade minister, announced proudly that 9 of the 11 staff at our Beijing embassy are proficient in Mandarin. Where did he get that? This man walked with dinosaurs guy gets his numbers the same place as I got mine. I know this as Charles Burton, a diplomat twice posted to that China office, says that nearly all staff there are incapable of reading a Chinese newspaper or understanding a newscast. Am I surprised? Not in the least, since I've followed Mr. Day's career since he was a resident nutcase in the Reform Party. Expect more of the same from this honorable member. But just try to imagine Adam in the Garden of Eden, while grilling a brontosaurus steak, becoming a meal himself for a Tyrannosaurus Rex. End of the line for a noble experiment, eh? If that had happened, there'd be no debate in Canada over the protection of woodland caribou. Blue whales would not face extinction at the hands of rogue hunters. Alberta's tar sands would remain unmolested. Afghanistan would not be the scene of confrontation between religious fanatics and foreign invaders. Moose and bear would roam through Prince George unafraid of automobiles. Say, what good is the human species anyway? This has been the 310th opening of Uncle Don's Porcupine Petting Zoo on CFUR at 88.7 FM in Prince George. Until next month, pilgrims, when I will regale you with tales of Portugal.